Hi, my name is Steve Fleming, CEO of River City Bank, which was founded almost 50 years ago. As a leader in a family business myself and a longtime board member for the Capital Region Family Business Center, I understand firsthand how incredibly important family businesses are to our economy and the unique challenges they face in sustaining from generation to generation. I think that you will find this podcast series informative, entertaining, and even humorous at times. That's why our family business, River City Bank, is proud to support this podcast. I hope you enjoy today's episode.
It was very impactful to watch my mom take that on, because not only was she running the business now on her own with a team of people who, you know, around her, a fantastic team. I'm remiss if I don't mention the fact that we have some of these employees who are still with us today. But watching her take that on, not only was she running the business, but she had two children still in high school. So she was still at every football game recording the game tape. She was part of all these other community things, still being a mom at the same time. And so that was so impactful for me.
Hello, and welcome to A Seat at the Table, Trials and Triumphs of Family Business, brought to you by the Capital Region Family Business Center, helping family businesses to grow and prosper. I'm Natalie Mariani Kling, your host and a fourth-generation family business member. I am so excited to join you around the table for real conversations about what it's like to grow up in, become a part of, and navigate the complexities of a family business. Special thanks to another family business, River City Bank, for their generous support of this program. For over six generations, the Bogle family has farmed the rich soil of California. And over the last three generations, they have mastered the art of growing and making quality wine. Today, we speak to Jody Bogle, one of the three family members running Bogle Family Vineyards. We talk about the rapid growth of Bogle into a national brand, how the early loss of their parents led Jody and her brothers into leadership, and why the idea of balancing family and business is an oxymoron. Welcome, Jody. Thank you so much for being here. You are Vice President of Consumer Relations, which is a very humble title for everything that actually falls under your umbrella, which, as I understand, includes the tasting room, external and internal communications, direct-to-consumer sales, international sales, and I'm sure there's more.
It really was just kind of a catch-all, I think. It's hard in most family businesses. I think a lot of family members do take on so many roles. And so how do you put a title on that? It's tough.
It is always the toughest part. That and writing your own bio.
Yes, I agree.
Jody, your family is sixth generation of farmers in California, and you and your brothers are third generation winemakers. Can you briefly catch us up from how you all started to where you are today?
So our family came west from Tennessee in the 1870s when the Sacramento River Delta was being kind of settled during the years surrounding the gold rush. People were coming from around the world to go up to the foothills and find their fortune. And our family came and settled in the Delta, which was really kind of the breadbasket for feeding all those people coming in, that influx of people who were coming into San Francisco and then coming right up the river past our property and up into Sacramento before they headed into the hills. So our family came and originally farmed orchards, peaches, pears, and cherries, and did so for several generations. And however, during the 1930s, it was my grandfather's parents who were unfortunate enough to lose those original land holdings during the Great Depression. A lot of families lost their land and just weren't able to support their families. So my grandfather was a teenager at the time. I'm sure it was very formable for him to go through that. You know, they lost the land his parents farmed, the dirt he played in, the house he most certainly was born in. And they moved to north a little bit to be tenant farmers for another family. So our grandfather kind of went through that during a very young age. And he was able to attend California Agricultural School for a couple years. And then he joined the Navy and he fought in the Pacific arena during World War II. And when he came back, he had saved enough money to put down roots again for property of our own. So he bought our first acreage on Merritt Island, which is where our home ranch is today. And for the next 20 years, he was a corn farmer and a row crop farmer. He grew field corn for DeKalb and shipped it back to the Midwest. And, you know, the whole area at that time, a lot of tomatoes, a lot of sugar beets, a lot of wheat, a lot of safflower. But in 1968, he wanted to try something different. And so he planted potatoes and they all immediately died. And so he had somebody come out to take a look. And the gentleman said, "Mr. Bogle, I'm sorry, I don't know what happened to your potatoes, but this is beautiful country for wine grapes." So he started with 10 acres of Petite Syrah, and he started with 10 acres of Chenin Blanc, and they flourished. And from those original 20 acres, our little winemaking business grew. And actually, we didn't make wine right away. We grew those grapes. We were just grape growers from 1968 to 1978 for bigger wineries like Wente Brothers and Charles Krug. And then in 1978, we put it in the bottle under our own label for the first time. So that's kind of the origin story of Bogle. Our dad was a teenager, was in high school when our grandfather planted those first vines and helped him do that. And when he came back from college with our mom in tow, the two generations, our grandfather and our parents, worked together at the fledgling business.
That's awesome. Do you know whose idea it was to start your own label?
I think the story I've heard, we got a cancellation letter of a contract from August Sebastiani. And, you know, "Dear Mr. Bogle, thank you so much, but we're not going to need your fruit next year." And so I've always kind of remembered our dad saying, "Well, gosh, you know, why can't we do it for ourselves?" So our dad was really instrumental in starting that first label. I think our grandfather, with that history from the Depression, wanted to stay diversified and wanted to keep lots of different, you know, crops growing. But our dad really felt like the future of the business was with the winery. And so when our grandfather passed away in 1989, our dad really jumped in earnestly with wine growing. And all of our acreage at that time, which was about 500 acres, was planted two wine grapes kind of over the next couple of years. Our mom was, you know, raising four kids, doing the books at night. The offices were in our home. And so it was really a small family business that as a kid, I got to watch them kind of devote their passions to. So it was fantastic.
Isn't it awesome the way that failure can turn into, I mean, both with the potatoes and the cancellation of the contract, Bogle may never have been here without those two things.
There's a lot of things that, you know, transpired without which Bogle might not be here. We've been extremely, lucky to be kind of have things happen to us, but to also be able to take advantage and turn a different way and pivot. We've had a lot of great success due to those things that we didn't expect to happen the way we wanted them to.
Yeah, so good. Technically, you're third generation, but you've also said that in some ways, you and your brothers are more like second generation. Tell us about that.
So, exactly. We are technically third generation, but because the business is still there's so few family members still in the business. And our grandfather and our parents kind of worked in tandem, right? We kind of consider that the first generation. Warren, Ryan, and I are technically the third generation, but really it's more like the second generation. We grew up together watching our parents build this, you know, from the ground up. We all work in the business in the day-to-day operation. And we understand that it'll be the next generation where we have our kids coming in, cousins, where that technically feels a little bit more like that third generation. So even though our kids will be fourth generation, if they decide to be a part of the business.
Yeah. What was it like growing up in the business? What was your perspective of your parents and watching that at, from a child's perspective?
I had a great childhood. I mean, we lived out in Clarksburg, which today still is so rural and remote. You know, we got to jump on our bikes and ride around and play in the fields. And it was just such an idyllic childhood, you know, throw rocks in the slough and fish. And it was a really great place to grow up. And watching our parents build something from the ground up was tremendous. Lots of milestones from first bottles to, you know, our mom working and showing the wine at tastings, bringing somebody in to create a software program for payroll. You know, it was really amazing to watch them learn throughout the years. I was so blessed to get to be a part of that. I did have to work in the fields as a teenager. I wanted to lifeguard at the school pool or work in the pear packing shed with my friends. But my dad said, why? I have a perfectly good vineyard right here. So I would work with the crew. I'd be in the field at 6 o'clock in the morning and done at 4 in the afternoon. Oh, I hated every minute of it. But today I can look back. I'm so grateful for that experience because it really showed me what goes into producing every bottle of wine that we make. And I have such respect for the process and for what it takes and all the hard work that goes into it.
It's funny, that really is more of a second generation experience.
Yeah.
And I think there is something so incredibly valuable that the second generation gets by watching that, by really their parents needing them to work in the business and not having necessarily the choices as a younger kid. Did you ever think you wanted to do something outside the family business as you were growing up?
I didn't intend to work in the family business growing up. When I graduated from high school, the business was still very small. We had our dad farming, our mom doing the books. We had a winemaker and we had a salesperson. And that was all we needed. So there was no expectation that I would come back and work for the business. I hadn't really even thought about it, to be honest. I went away to college, got my English degree and my teaching credential, and I was living and working in Portland, Oregon. And this was, you know, mid-90s. It was incredible because I was starting to see the wine on shelves, and the little bodega around the corner from where I lived, my apartment I'll never forget it, had Bogle Merlot on the shelf, and it was incredible to see it there. And so I was definitely starting to feel the pull to come back and be a part of it. And then in 1997, our father passed away pretty unexpectedly. And it was a very easy decision to circle the wagons, come immediately home, and be a part of the business going forward. He was 45 when he passed away. And so our brother Warren was wrapping up his last year at Chico State in ag business. Now, Warren did know that he wanted to come back and work for the business. So he came back immediately as well. And he took over the farming operation for our dad. Mom kind of became it. She was running the business at that point. And I came back and started kind of finding my place in the business as well at that time. It was a difficult time period, but it was also, there was just no question to coming back and taking it on.
Did your mom have any business experience?
No, she majored in poli sci in college. And I think actually my parents pretty much just majored in each other in college. But she had grown up on her grandparents, spending summers on her grandparents' farm in eastern Oregon. And so she loved Clarksburg. She loved the lifestyle and just embraced it. I know she didn't anticipate being on her own at 45, running a business that was really starting to grow and bloom. But she did it. I mean, she was a really savvy business person. She continued to learn throughout her career. And gosh, I want to say in the mid-2000s, she was, you know, the businesswoman of the year in the California legislature. So, you know, she was a real role model for me. And I was really grateful to get to work with her for as long as I did.
tell us about that a little bit, because I think in that time period, when you're growing up and you're really watching your dad, and I think this is true for a lot of us in that time, you're growing up and you're watching your dad kind of run the operations. And a lot of our moms were helping, but not necessarily the leader of the company, right? Or the family even. And then suddenly she had to take over both. Suddenly she has to take on this matriarchal role and also a business leadership role. How did that impact you in terms of when you reflect back on it? I mean, that's an awesome process to watch a woman go through, I would imagine. But tell us what that was like for you.
It was very impactful to watch my mom take that on, because not only was she running the business now on her own with a team of people who, you know, around her, a fantastic team. I'm remiss if I don't mention the fact that, you know, we have some of these employees who are still with us today who have been so integral in the success of Bogle. But watching her take that on, not only was she running the business, but she had two children still in high school. So she was still at every football game recording the game tape, right?
Oh my
at the
God.
Local high school. She was a part of all these other community things, still being a mom at the same time. And so that was so impactful for me in kind of watching her take on all those roles and juggle that and keep all those plates spinning.
What is she doing today?
She passed away very young also. We lost her in 2011. She was 59. So that was, you know, a big blow to us as well. But Warren and I had already been working in the business for 10 years. And we had been working with this, you know, this great team that we had all put together, that she and Dad had started putting together. And so the transitions were very easy, because it wasn't like all of a sudden these kids are coming back and pounding the table and saying, we're going to do it this way. We were already working in the business. We were already working with a core team of people at the winery. Our youngest brother, Ryan, at that point came back as well. And he took on some of the accounting that Mom was doing. He and Mom were like-minded in the numbers side of things, which it's good that I'm not in charge of the numbers, because that's not my forte.
It's helpful to have a family member who can track numbers.
Yes, exactly.
Well, those are two pretty... To lose your parents so early is hugely impactful. Throughout the history of Bogle, have there been other moments where you and your brothers or your family felt like maybe the business wouldn't make it?
I don't know that we've had situations where we sat around the table and felt like there was an imminent crisis. But there have been times where, for example, when our father passed away, where there have been offers to sell. When Mom got sick and knew she was not going to survive, you know, she said, you know what, I think we should entertain offers. And when that happened with Mom, all three of us who are involved in the business, Warren, Ryan, and myself, we all went to her individually. And we didn't know that we were all going to go to her individually, but we all went to her individually and said, Mom, don't sell the business. We want to do this. We want to keep this going forward. We want to build this business and keep it strong so that it's still there in case our kids want to be a part of it someday. You know, it's just ours to kind of be stewards of. So I know we all came to her during that time, and I know that made a big impact on her. It was she was happy about that.
That's probably pretty awesome at that stage to have all of you come individually. So now you're running the day-to-day operations with your brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about what are some of the challenges of working with family, and how do you navigate family with business and then also family get-togethers and birthday parties and those kinds of things?
With family business, I mean, there are inherent challenges. You have people with different perspectives and different motivations, right? Because we all are in a different part of the business. Warren is the president of the company and he manages the vineyard operations. Ryan, as I said, is our CFO and managing all those good spreadsheets. And so we all have different perspectives. And I think what's so great about that is that while we may differ about the way something should happen or the way things should go, at the end of the day, we all have the same vision for this company and we all want the same thing. And so it's almost like having those differing perspectives makes us stronger because we're all coming to the same place, but with differing ideals, different thoughts, different perspectives and motivations. So in that respect, I mean, yes, absolutely. There are challenges and there are discussions and there are disagreements. But at the end of the day, we all want the same thing for the company.
When you're sitting in a room together and things get maybe a little heated and maybe there's just even hard conversations, do you have to remind each other, like, hey, we want the same thing at the end of the day? Do you have to go away and come back? I mean, what does it look like when things get hard?
You know, I have to be honest, the three of us disagree pretty rarely about things. Again, when we're making some of the company decisions, we are doing so with a larger team. And so we just want what's best for the company. And at the end of the day, one of our core values is quality, being able to over-deliver at every price point that we produce. We've had a lot of changes over the years in that we're no longer just one brand. We used to just be Bogle Vineyards and we had 8 wines and it was pretty straightforward. But over the last several years, we've expanded to be more of a family of brands, a collection of wines. We have several brands at several different price points. And so for us, the number one priority is making sure that every single one of those wines over-delivers at its price point and that the consumer is going to be pleased and excited and enjoy that wine and know that they got their money's worth. And so all of our decisions come back to that. So at the end of the day, that's what's most important for Bogle.
Yeah. You have the same North Star, if you will.
Exactly.
Same focus. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, you're succeeding because, and this is not to overly compliment, I'm so genuine when I say my husband and I, one of our first bottles of wine that we really got to know and love was Bogle.
Oh, gosh.
And it was at a price point in our younger life that we could afford. And so that was the wine we bought all the time.
Oh,
and so
thank you.
I think when you said that, I was like, oh, that's so true. Because that was we felt like we could get quality at a price point that had value for us, that was at the time of our life that we could afford it. So good work on that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. There is a team of people. Our winemaker, Eric Offit, has been with us for 30 years this spring.
Wow.
We have long tenured employees and everybody works really, really hard to meet that quality goal.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So how big is Bogle now? Tell us a little bit about the operations.
We have grown exponentially, gosh, from those first 500 acres that we had planted in the late 80s. We now farm over 2,500 acres mostly in Clarksburg. We have a vineyard in Lodi and a vineyard up in the Sierra Nevada foothills. We also source fruit from around the state. We have grower partners in so many growing regions. We're always seeking out the best quality fruit that we can absolutely find. So we're sourcing Pinot Noir from the Russian River Valley. We're sourcing Zinfandel from Lodi and Amador. We're working with partners who also share our sustainability commitment. We have always, since the late 2000s, we've been a part of the California Rules for Sustainable Wine Growing Program. And all of our estate acreage is certified by that third-party certification program. We
Wow.
also pay a bonus to our outside growers to be a part of that program as well. So with last year's crush, over 96% 90% of all the grapes brought into Bogle were certified sustainable, which is quite a feat when you're talking about the volumes that we're talking about. So
that's incredible, actually. And I'm sure it's not an easy process to get the certification.
It's so funny. I remember when Warren brought this to us. He said, hey, I want to pilot this program with a couple of our fields, and it's about sustainability. And I remember saying to him, are you sure? I mean, that's a lot of work. Are you sure you want to do it? And Warren said, you know what? He goes, really? I'm not farming much differently than Dad and Grandpa taught me to farm. It's just more paperwork.
Yes.
Really, it's the way we've always done things. And it's just about making sure that the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, and really encouraging our partners to do it as well, to be a part of it as well. Because at the end of the day, if we're going to be sustainable to hand this business over to the next generation, if it's going to still be here, it's what we do in the office. It's what we do in the vineyard. It's what we do in the winery. It's what we do with our sales team. I mean, sustainability, there are so many components to it, and we want to tap into as many of those as possible.
That must make you feel pretty proud when you think about, hey, we really are doing things the way that our father and grandfather taught us. And, they happen to be in alignment with what's good for people on the earth.
It's a wonderful feeling, for sure.
Yeah. And rare, I think, and probably an advantage of being a family business, because it didn't start with a corporate perspective. It really started from, how do we honor the land and get the best quality fruit? I mean, that's something that not everybody can afford to do. I think when you're doing that as a family, there's just a different perspective. And I don't know if I can put my finger on it, but
a lot of that came from, you know, that core value of quality in the bottle, because our mom truly believed that you put everything back into the quality of the wine. That included investing in more barrels, investing in better equipment, spending a little more for wine grapes, right? Those are all the things that are going to contribute to producing a better wine. Because at the end of the day, Natalie, if you had bought that bottle of Bogle, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, and you and your husband had opened it and you had not enjoyed it, you would not have bought it again. That would have been
That's right. Yep.
And so what's going to get someone to become a true consumer of your wine, an advocate, someone who's going to share it with their friends or take it to a party or give it as a gift or, you know, say, hey, I found this wine at the grocery store. It's amazing. You should try it. That was our marketing strategy for years. And at the end of the day, it still holds true. You can do advertising and you can do, you know, social media and you can do this or that or the other thing. But if somebody buys the wine and they don't enjoy it, you've got a one-time customer. So that's really putting the investment back into the bottle has been the most important thing.
That's a great thing to live by. I think that's really helpful too for other family businesses to think about reinvesting into that quality, because it's so easy too as easy and difficult as family members, I think, to try to understand also what kind of profit do we take from this business that we're doing so that we can have profit, and how much do we invest back in? And to keep that standard of quality means you have to invest more than you want to. It's not going to necessarily add to your lifestyle, but it's going to add to this thing that's bigger than you that you guys all believe in that will sustain for your kids if they choose to be a part of it. Jody, you talked a little bit about the tonnage. Tell us about the brand. Where is it, and kind of what's the size of the brand in the wine industry?
So the brand that most people are familiar with is Bogle Family Vineyards. It's our traditional wine brand, the one that we launched all those years ago. It is available at most retailers nationwide, also in about 45 different countries. So that's very exciting. It's a funny story. The export department, quote unquote, I call it a department. It's myself and I have one employee who handles all our logistics. And of course, it's only part of me because it's only part of what I do. But I want to say it was in the early 2000s, somebody came to the tasting room and our mom was pouring and they said to her, I was in Taiwan and I saw your wine. My mom said, what? We don't sell our wine in Taiwan. So she came to me and she said, hey, check this out. You need to look into this. She goes, I want to know where our wine's being sold. I want to make sure it's not being sold off the back of a truck somewhere. And I want you to sell it in countries where I can travel, because she loved to travel.
Oh, that's amazing.
So that was the start of our little export department. And now we're in 45 different countries. So it's pretty amazing. We have a couple other brands as well. So Bogle's our entry-level brand that you're going to see at nationwide retailers. We have our Phantom brand, which is kind of our reserve selection. It's a Chardonnay and a red blend that are our premium selection, lots of wine grapes that Eric kind of culls out and makes, you know, adds a little longer time in oak, a little more barrel treatment. And so those wines are also available nationwide. Our Juggernaut brand is fairly new. We just launched Juggernaut in 2018. We continue to add to that line of wines as well. It's very exciting. That's actually a brand for us that's growing pretty rapidly right now. It has these labels that are very artistic and eye-catching. Each label is a different alpha predator. So our Cabernet Sauvignon is a lion, and our Russian River Pinot Noir is an osprey. Last year, we released a Chardonnay from the Sonoma Coast, which has a great white shark on it, which is really fun.
So what was the what was the catalyst for that brand?
Well, it goes back to, for many years, Bogle was growing leaps and bounds. We got some great press in the Wall Street Journal, and people were enjoying the wine. And so we were seeing double-digit growth every year, which was amazing. And so we used to joke that Bogle was a juggernaut. It couldn't be stopped. And so when it came time to come up with a new wine brand and a name, we thought, well, we already have the name. What we didn't have was the label. And gosh, we must have looked at 100 different label options. We looked at asteroids and volcanoes and freight trains and, you know, all these unstoppable things. However, when we first saw the lion, we all just went, wow. It was so eye-catching and so different than anything else on shelf that we wanted to take a risk and be bold and do something different. And so we're really excited about how well Juggernaut has been received, and it's being very well received by a younger generation of wine drinkers. I think it's no surprise that wine consumption is down a little bit across all categories. And so anytime we feel like we've caught a little bolt of lightning with Juggernaut. And so we're very excited to be adding to it. We just added a Sauvignon Blanc from Marlborough, New Zealand, our very first import.
Oh, my gosh.
So very
fun. That is very hip and cool. That's fun to do.
Yeah.
Do you guys ever joke that because you do have your parents maybe somewhere else watching over and maybe influencing your brand a little bit, do you ever kind of joke amongst the three of you that they are influencing it in some way?
Oh, you know, I don't know. I like to think that mom and dad and our grandparents are kind of watching over, making sure we're keeping true to the family values. Our Phantom brand actually is kind of a nod to the generations that have come before us. Bogle is actually the Scottish word for ghost. So that's where Phantom came from. There's history and lore that dates back to early ancient Scotland. So it's kind of fun to perpetuate that. And there are people who think they've seen a phantom in our cellar. I like to think of it more as kind of the spirits of mom and dad and our grandparents watching over us and making sure we're not cutting any corners.
I believe it. That's beautiful. So I stopped you short. You were talking about Juggernaut. Is there anything else that you want to share?
Just that it has been a real transition over the last few years from being one wine with just having Bogle Family Vineyards to now having kind of a collection and a family of brands. And we're very excited about a brand new project. It's been 3.5 years in the making. We've just launched a brand called Elemental Wines. It is a wine that is 100% packaged in an aluminum wine bottle.
Oh, cool.
We recognize that innovation and sustainability is so important in the wine industry, especially if we're going to reach out to those younger consumers who are looking for something a little bit different. They want to be more sustainable. And so what we've done with this brand is we're offering an eco-friendly and sustainable option for wine drinkers who don't want to sacrifice the quality and the tradition and romance of wine drinking. Wine in cans is not new. You've seen cans and you've kind of seen the water bottle-shaped vessel. This is an actual aluminum wine bottle. So it's in the shape of a wine bottle. It feels like a wine bottle. It's really got some really sexy kind of label design. And we're very, very excited about the launch of it. It's going to be hitting store shelves here in the next month or two.
Oh, that is so exciting. I'm going to keep my eye out for it. How cool. So as you have launched these different brands over the last few years, it's one thing when you have an established brand like Bogle, and it's very difficult to get any brand to have legs, right, or to be known by the consumer. So as you launch each new brand, what has been your strategy for making that brand as knowable and successful and accessible as Bogle has been?
Well, I don't know that that's even possible. Bogle's the, 30-year success story, right? When you've been in the market that long, it's really Bogle kind of did all the hard work for itself with the word of mouth and the great reviews. Again, to answer that question, Natalie, I think we just have to go back to quality, because we want every single wine brand at every single price point to be the absolute best offering of wine it can be. And so when we put that investment back into the wine grapes and back into the vinification and into the barrel program and into our team who works so hard on it, that's going to show. And it's going to stand, those wines will hopefully stand apart on the shelf when people give them a try.
So when you are launching a new brand, are you standing on the hope that when you are talking to buyers and consumers, that the quality itself will stand on its own? Or is it, how are you going out? Because you look at the wine industry and it's overwhelming to try to choose a wine off the shelf, right?
So there's two different kind of paths, right? And they're parallel. You're talking to the buyers about these new wines. And the buyers know that for example, Elemental and Juggernaut, the buyers know that these are products that are produced by Bogle. And we hope that our reputation precedes, that our relationship with these buyers over the years come into play. But for example, with Elemental and Juggernaut, it doesn't say Bogle on the label. So the consumer who picks this up in the store isn't going to have that connection. They may have enjoyed Bogle in the past, but they're not going to know that the same winemaker is making Elemental wines.
Right.
So it's kind of a parallel path. So we do have marketing plans in place. We have social media channels for the new brands. We want them to have their own identity, and we do want them to stand on quality. But in order to get them onto the store shelf, you are going to try to leverage that relationship you have with the buyer who understands Bogle and understands the quality and who is standing behind that product. So
totally. And then to get it off the shelf.
That is the million-dollar question.
It's the million-dollar question. But it's more interesting to me because we're all trying to figure that. Everyone's trying to figure that out, right? But with each new brand and each new label that you launch, it's another risk you're willing to take. And so how do you and your brothers see that? Is it as scary as it sounds?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially this Elemental wines is a perfect example. No one has done this before. No one has done the aluminum shaped wine bottle. And in fact, we co-developed this with the aluminum company. We went to them and said, can you do this? And initially they told us they couldn't. It couldn't be done. So it's been 3.5 years of development, not only of the bottle itself, but we did quite a bit of market research. We talked to people. We did focus groups. But at the end of the day, all of that is an investment, and you have no idea if someone is going to take a look at this and say, oh, why would I buy this? You have no idea what that consumer pull-through is going to be. Mm-hmm. So, oh, yes. I mean, there are a lot of sleepless nights and a lot more gray hairs and all that good stuff because it is indeed a risk. But, you know, kind of the way I look at it, Natalie, is my grandfather took a risk planting the first wine grapes in Clarksburg in 1968. Our dad took a risk giving up the row crops and putting wine in the bottle for the first time in 1978. Our mom took a risk when our dad passed away by keeping the business going. And again, when she had to step away in 2007, this is our risk, right? This is our time to put it out there and make a decision that where you don't know what the outcome is going to be. You can't anticipate. Nobody has that crystal ball. We don't know what's going to happen with any of the wine brands or the wine industry in general, right? Nobody knows. But every generation has had to kind of take that risk. And all we can do is come back to the most important tenet, which is making the absolute best wine we can, getting it in front of folks who will hopefully try it, enjoy it, and share it with friends. So at the end of the day, that's all we can hope for.
Do you and your brothers, do you all have the same appetite for risk?
That's a good question. I think Warren and I, because we're closer in age, Warren and I are only 18 months apart. And I think our level of risk is a little lower than perhaps our younger brother, Ryan. But I don't know. We haven't, I'll be honest, we haven't put ourselves out there and taken too big of risks. You know, we've done some with expansion. There's always risk, of course. But this is the first thing we've really all decided to that we've really worked on this project. And we knew that if we were going to do it, go big or go home. Right. I mean, you have to put it out there and we'll just have to kind of wait and see what the response is. I mean, so far, our initial responses from the buyers has been very, very positive. But at the end of the day, if there's no pull through from the consumer, it really doesn't matter what the buyers think. Now, I really, really hope that all those buyers know what they're talking about. And I think, especially with the sustainability component of Elemental, people are asking for an alternative that allows them to make a more sustainable decision with regard to their consumption, whether it's, you know, wine or macaroni and cheese or whatever. So
totally.
I think that this really is, we hope it's going to resonate with consumers.
Well, it's right on time, in my subjective opinion. It's a fantastic idea. So I really hope it does well.
Thank
too.
You.
Jody, I want to talk to you about what it is to be a woman in business and a woman in the wine industry in particular. You are one of the only women we've even had on this podcast. And there are not so many women leaders, even in family business. So I'd love to hear your perspective on, are there innate challenges in being a woman in business and or in the wine industry?
I think any woman who, you know, has a position in a business, whether it's family business or not, has challenges. Specifically the wine industry, it's a pretty male-dominated business. I'm working with two brothers, of course, but I don't know that the challenges are specific to me, right? I have my job and I travel quite a bit. But at the, you know, I come home and at the end of the day, someone's still got to make dinner and take care of the laundry and get the kids where they need to be. And so I know these are not singular challenges. I mean, every working mom has these challenges. I will say, I'll never forget after, I don't know if it was just after I got married or when I first was expecting my first child, my mother says to me, you know, you can't have it all. I'm like, what are you talking about, Mom? Women can have it all. We've been told our whole lives, women, you can do it all. You can have it all. And she goes, you can't. Something will always suffer. If you're killing it at work, you're getting everything done, meeting all your responsibilities at work, your home life's going to take a back seat. If you're on it at home and everything's going great and you're really present and involved at home, then your work might take a back seat. I'll never forget her telling me that and thinking, oh, Sean, no, I can do it all. What's she talking about? Oh, no. She my mother was a sage woman. She knew exactly what she was talking about. And so it is, there are, just like any, you know, working parent, you've got a lot of balls in the air, a lot of plates spinning all the time, and my kid frequently is late to things, and we do a lot of FaceTime while I'm traveling, but my children know that when I do put the business first and they're kind of in the backseat role, that it is for a greater good, right? It's for the family business. It's for something that wasn't started by me and won't be ended by me, that it's part of their legacy as well. And so that brings me a little more peace and allows me to give myself a little more grace as I try to balance the whole work-life thing, which I think is an oxymoron,
totally.
That comment.
I totally agree.
I don't love that comment, Jenna.
I know. I totally agree. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. How is everything perfectly balanced? It can't be. Even with supportive husbands, even with supportive partners, for some reason, it does seem that women are more of the ones who are keeping the soccer schedule and who's bringing the snacks to what, and the, you know, the birthday gifts are being bought and all the things. How do you allow for that with your own employees? I mean, do you think about that with the women who are working with you?
Absolutely. So at Bogle, we have always let all of our employees know that family comes first. It is just, I mean, how can you be a family business when family is not one of your values? And so we encourage people to do what they need to do, whether it's in times of need or whether there's new members coming into the family. We encourage that with our team. And we feel like our employees are family. We do feel like we know we wouldn't be where we are today without them. And so allowing them to not have to make those hard decisions sometimes allows them to give themselves the grace, right, where they can put what they need to first. It's going to make them a better employee as they come back because they know that they have the opportunity. They don't have to give anything up, right? They don't have to sacrifice. And so I know that so many of our employees are still with us today because we really put family first.
Do you think that the fact that your mom was a leader for so long and that you are an important role in leadership, that the female influence in leadership has nurtured that value?
I would hope so. But, you know, the culture comes from everybody, right? In a family business, it comes from everybody who's working at the company, not just the family members. Now, the tone is set by the family members, but with our long-term employees, the people who've been with us forever, because they feel like a part of our family, it's coming from them as well. It's not just top to bottom, it's bottom to top, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Really beautiful. Yep. For the women listening, oftentimes, in my own experience even, I think that you always know that you have a voice in a family business. Maybe not for everyone, but in my experience, I know I have a voice as a woman. I also think it's difficult to have the feminine perspective sometimes heard and understood. And it's more of a subtle thing. It's hard to put your finger on, but sometimes, you know, I tend to think there are masculine and feminine qualities, right? And some of those feminine qualities are intuition and communication and connection. And those aren't always easy to bring into a boardroom or to bring into a sales meeting, you know? So how have you found that? What's your experience been with that? And how would you mentor other women who are navigating that?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think that there are subtle, it's a subtle difference, but it's an important one because it is a balance. You know, with my brothers and myself, you need all of those perspectives, right? It's what That's makes right. us, each of us, who we are. To other women, I might just, from my experience, I would just say it's a part of who you are. It's not necessarily for me a conscious effort to come into a meeting and say, well, I need to advocate this from the voice of the working mom. It's more just who I am and more of a kind of whole thought process that comes into my decision making. So I think at the end of the day, you just have to be authentic and advocate for what you think the best, whatever you're arguing, whatever your perspective is, you know, be true to that and know that that's kind of inherent in your, whatever is inherent in your perspective is going to come across in those decision making periods.
That's an interesting discernment to say, I'm not going to go in and necessarily consciously fight. There might not be a need to be an activist about it, but if you're true to who you are, if you're courageous enough to ask for what you need, if you're aware of something, you know, oftentimes I think women are able to hold a little bit bigger of an understanding of all the facets, specifically, say, from a working mom's perspective, so that you can bring those things into the conversation from an authentic perspective versus we need to do this because you feel like you have to carry a sign, mm-hmm. you know, around mm-hmm. it. So that's a really interesting discernment. Can you think of an example where that's played out for you?
Oh, gosh. I don't know that I can think of one example, but I do know that there is a different tenor generally that I can bring in, right, as the working mom and as the female at the table generally. So it's been an interesting dynamic.
But ultimately, speak truth.
Always.
That's what I hear you saying. Yeah.
Be authentic.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's great. And it's harder to do than we say, especially if you're the only woman in the room. It can be challenging. Mm-hmm. But muy importante.
Definitely.
Okay. Well, one of the reasons we started this podcast, gosh, over a year ago, is because the Family Business Center recognized that family businesses often feel like they're reinventing the wheel and that the stories, all of our stories are so important and that this podcast, amongst other things, could be resources for family businesses to lean on. Have you had experiences with the Family Business Center where you have felt that support?
The programs that the Family Business Center has put together are really remarkable. I know the Generations event, it's been very impactful. I've done several seminars and the podcasts I really enjoy. So it's been a real honor to be a part of this today. So thank you.
Oh, thanks, Jody. Oh my gosh, what an honor to have you and your family tell their story. Jody, what is it in you that wants to carry on the family legacy?
Well, I think in any person, there's a desire to carry on what you saw, you know, form who you are as a child, right? And I watched my parents work tirelessly, our grandparents devoted to a company that, you know, ultimately has really become something they could never have imagined. And so I really feel it's my job to just work hard and keep the business growing, keep it relevant, keep it moving forward so that when and if our next generation wants to be a part of it, and they're all very young still at this point. So if the next generation wants to be a part of it, it's there for them. There's also a drive in so many people, you know, it comes down to wanting to make your parents proud. Right. I mean, so many of us grow up in that manner, right? Not wanting to let your folks down. And so I know for me that drives a lot of what I do every day.
Yeah, that's really neat. Do you think that the success of Bogle has been due more to hard work or luck?
I think the success of Bogle has been a little bit of both. I know that without some of that luck, without some of the reviews we've gotten and the turns of fate, we wouldn't be where we are today. But if we hadn't been positioned to work hard and take advantage of those opportunities, we wouldn't be here either. So I think it's a little bit of both.
Me too. That's awesome. Jody, thank you so much. Your story is really meaningful, and what a great example to all of us of the passion and the dedication, the risk, the way you've continually evolved through very difficult times. I really wish you the best. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me, Natalie. It's been an honor.
Thank you for listening to A Seat at the Table, Trials and Triumphs of Family Business. If you like what you heard today, please be sure to subscribe, post a positive review, and share with another family business owner. For more information about the Capital Region Family Business Center, visit capfamilybiz.org. That's capfamilybus.org. You can also follow us on Facebook at Capital Region Family Business Center and on Instagram at capfambiz. If you know of other family businesses that have a story to share, please contact the Family Business Center at info@capfamilybiz.org. That's B-U-S. We're grateful for the support from River City Bank to make this program possible. And special thanks to Guy Raz from How I Built This for a wonderful closing question that's become one of our favorites.
Hi, this is Steve Fleming of River City Bank, and we're proud to bring you the Capital Region Family Business Center podcast series.